aboard, you people. Starship Rokan show off for another day of broadcast insolence. So get ready here. We're keeping an eye on Washington right now. The Senate is just about to begin the vote on impeachment. We'll bring the results to you. We believe they're basically already determined, but we'll let you know immediately when that happens. They're going to go to a roll call vote here in just a moment. They're reading the articles of impeachment now on the in the well of the Senate. So we expect that sometime in the next 10-15 minutes that we'll have the final totals. The only surprise here, the only change is the movement of Mitt Romney, the Republican, to vote to convict and remove the President of the United States, but he's the sole Republican. We'll have to see if Joe Manchin, the conservative Democrat from West Virginia, flips and goes the other way. There, we're still waiting to determine whether or not that happens. Still a little unclear. So not expected to, but we don't know for sure. So we'll watch that. We'll let you know what's happening there. Demetrius Ivory is also going to be with us coming up. We got snow coming. The snow. I get hysterical about this, and I've gotten hysterical and been happily surprised that it wasn't so bad the last three times that there was supposed to be major snow or even moderate snow. Anything with an M in front, even minuscule snow, I don't like. I'm not a fan of the white stuff. And I know a lot of people have accused me of that before, but I don't like, I don't like the idea of having to clean it up. I don't like slipping on it. I don't like the idea that it's down there doing anything. So we'll find out from him what we're talking about. This actually, Lauren, you've been doing the traffic and the weather here. This looks a little bit like it's going to be a little more significant than the ones we've seen in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, and at least especially south of I-80, because they're under a winter weather advisory. That already started at 3, actually. The rest of us, not so much, but by Thursday, I believe it is, you know, snow is going to stick around the lake, and it will actually diminish in other areas. So, okay. You know,
all right.
Next few days.
I'm not a big fan here. All right, so Demetrius will be coming up with us in just a few minutes to discuss that with us also. poor Ryan Burrow. You know, he's a guy who works here at WGN Radio, and he also works for ABC News, and they sent him off. ABC News calls him like Batman. They put the big ABC bug up in the sky, and he has to run to some place, some far-flung place in the Midwest, because he's the Midwest Bureau guy, and he has to go somewhere. And so they said, Iowa caucuses. Ryan, you got to go to the Iowa caucuses. And he goes, okay, well, fine, I'll go on Friday, and I'll hang out for a couple of days. I'll let you know what's going on here. And then Monday night after the caucuses, maybe I'll drive back that night, or wait till Tuesday morning and drive back. Here we are Wednesday. They still don't know what they're doing. We still don't have a full answer. Who is it? And really, does anybody care anymore? Because Iowa is so screwed up, nobody seems to know. And nobody seems to think, oh, well, whatever happens here, it doesn't really matter. So Ryan will be joining us as well. And listen to this. This is pretty cool. This is unrelated to anything that's happening in Washington. This is something happening right back here at home, and it's a very cool thing. You know Ravinia, the Ravinia Festival, every summer up in Highland Park? You know, they got that big band shell and that gigantic lawn and restaurants and all that great stuff and accessible parking. Those are the things I like most about it. And a train that goes right by. There's so many things that I love about Ravinia. And now they let you take your specially contained alcohol into the actual pavilion, which they weren't letting you do before. Now they do. I have great respect for what happens. Those folks up at Ravinia are, you know, they got they have a classical music series at Ravinia. It's not just pop music. It's not just Tony Bennett every year.
Something for everyone, as I like to say.
And this year, they have a new conductor, and it's a woman. And that is so rare in classical music to have a conductor. She'll be conducting the Chicago Symphony Orchestra in a couple of moments, which, again, will be an historic moment. So we will meet her. She's being flown in to talk to us about this. It's a really, really cool thing. Maren Alsup is her name. And we'll find out how that all happened, because it is a great story. There's a lot of there has been a glass ceiling for the baton wielder in music for a long time. And that's it. And this is it's a very interesting. She has a great story of how she was able to overcome that. All right. So that's all just this hour alone. Imagine what else is going to be happening here. I'd tell you, but it would confuse you. And the Hawks tonight at 6:30. If you're on your way to the Hawks game, we're going to get you ready for that as well. Because let's just say that they got a point last night. That's important. But they got to win this against a very, very tough Boston Bruins team coming into the United Center tonight. And it's going to be a battle royale. We'll tell you all about that. But first, right now, Lauren's got the rest of the weather and the traffic.
How often do attacks happen on Chicago buses? And what is the CTA doing to keep riders safe? WGN-TV investigates tonight at 9.
All right. Thank you, Kevin.
You're welcome.
Very, very well done. All right. Demetrius Ivory joins us right now from the WGN-TV Weather Center. And there is, I don't know how freaked out I need to be, Demetrius, about what's actually happening here over the next couple of days. And my freakout level is at 7 right now because I just don't know any better. But maybe you can help me with this.
Well, you got to love this.
Okay.
Because first off today, most importantly, right, today is National Weather Person's Day.
Oh, you know what? I left my card at home.
Oh,
I brought
darn.
In a card for you.
What do you mean card? No. You mean gift card, right? I mean, no, you don't mean like a written homework.
No, it's funny because I went to the Walgreens and they had them. They had, they're a weather guy section right there.
Oh,
it's all
okay.
Skilling on the card, though. I thought that
That's fine. That's fine. Hey, as long as it's Skilling and Andrew Jackson, we'll accept it.
Yes.
Well, so anyway, what I really love about this storm, and just as a weather person on this day, the gift to me is that it's all snow. For Pete's sake, no more mixed precip. Some folks get rain, other folks get 4 inches and 6 inches. This is all snow that's coming our way.
I don't know if I like the idea of that.
That's a good part. We're already seeing snow down south of I-80. As a matter of fact, visibility in Peru down to 1.3 miles. Morris down to less than a mile. And in Joliet, a mile and a half. So it's already snowing south and west. Kankakee down to 1 mile visibility. So we're already seeing snow coming from the south. And areas south are going to get the worst of this.
Okay. And is it sticking around for over a day?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So the snow's going to continue to spread in from the south. Again, already hitting southern areas. Should be in Chicago. And I got it in by 4, maybe 5, to make for a pretty nice rush hour commute. Not heavy snow, but just snow, which would slow folks down. But we'll see snow, which will continue tonight, about 1 to 3 inches or so. And then tomorrow, the system snow gets out of here, but then lake effect snow is going to be possible. And that is a function of the wind. So that could linger into tomorrow evening.
Okay, just give me the tough stuff. Just give me totals.
Okay, totals. All 2 to 4. Generally, I'd say north of Chicago. So, as you get to the state line, north Wisconsin, Illinois state line, you're lucky if you get 2 inches.
Okay.
O'Hare is, I think, solidly in the 2 to 4 inch range. Spread that out all the way through Thursday, though.
Okay.
Only 1 to 3 tonight. And southern portions of Cook County, some of those lake effect areas near Lansing and Blue Island, those areas, you could certainly see more closer to that 4 inch range. And 4 plus possible as you get south into Kankakee County. And
south of I-80.
Oh, well, so I think miles south of I-80, yeah.
And this is a slow-moving deal?
It's a fast-moving system. It's going to rise.
Why is it landing for a day? Why is it?
Well, because after the first system snow moves through, then the lake effect snow is going to develop tomorrow.
Well, what does that mean for downtown in the city and stuff?
So that
like
means
that?
For downtown in the city, I do expect potentially another inch or so to come our way. It's lake effect, and honestly, we haven't had much of it this year. But
which is ironic because all we've been talking about is the lake. We'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, all we talk about is the lake. The water's at 39 degrees, so we're certainly expecting to see potential for lake effect because there's just a huge difference in temperatures. From, say, a mile up to, as you get down to the surface in the water. So that's called a lapse rate. So there's a huge difference because the lake's so warm. So we're going to have a very good chance, I think, of seeing some lake effect snow. And as you mentioned, maybe downtown, maybe just south of downtown, and certainly in the typical lake effect areas in northwest Indiana. I'm throwing out an inch out there, but with a heavier band, you can get that in just a short amount of time.
Right, I know. That's the one thing about lake effect. You can really pile on you.
Yeah.
Pretty fast if you're not careful.
Yeah, pretty.
Yeah, unless you put up a big wall, which was my idea. And I've been screaming build that wall for a long time, but not about humans. It was always about snow. I want to build a dome, actually. I've been talking about this with Skilling for years. I wanted to dome off downtown Chicago.
That would be nice.
Yeah. I wanted to, well, or wherever I lived to through downtown Chicago. It was a little bit of self-serving nature of mine that wanted me to do this, but that's what I was going for.
I think the only problem is that you keep everything in. You know what they say about walls? A lot of times they keep the snow in.
Well,
they keep people in as opposed to keeping people out. I mean, I think they might, whatever we're emitting here in Chicago might stick around for a long time.
Yeah, I wanted a heated dome so that we could watch the snow, but then it wouldn't land anywhere here, and it would always be like 72 and breezy.
That is pretty. You know, interesting. Look, they have around the fire have one of their practice stadiums right by our station here, and it's a big inflatable dome. It's pretty cool that they put it up in just a few days. A big inflatable dome, and inside I think there are two soccer fields, so you can play soccer all winter, and they have all stuff all winter. But one thing I think that no one expected was when we get a heavy snowstorm, all that snow sits on top of the dome, so they have to shovel it somehow.
So do they have to deflate it and shovel it?
I don't know if they shake it or something like that. But then they have to have crews out to shovel around, because now you have, you know, this huge structure. You know, who knows how many square feet of this dome covered with snow that all slides down to the side. Now you got mounds and mounds and mounds of snow,
yeah.
And they have to bring in people to shovel it. So.
How do they? I mean, do they just take brooms and they hit it from the inside? Like,
I don't know.
Knock it off the top.
That's
a story, Demetrius. I don't know. You know, you people are all worried about all these big things for, you know, the month of February. That's a nice story. How do they get the snow off that thing?
How do they get the snow? I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, you would think it's kind of. It'd be a little bit slippery, right? So
yeah.
A little bit of sun. Maybe they have some heat vents at the top and they just melt the stuff. And,
yeah, well, maybe that's. I mean, I don't know. It seems like. They would have, if you're going to have an inflatable dome, there must be an anti-snow device that they are familiar with.
You know, I'd
they have to use.
I'd imagine so. Or you never know. You're talking about humans, right?
I once pitched a TV show to a local station here, one of the many that they laughed me out of the office, about what happens to your toilet water when it leaves your toilet. I wanted to follow it. For an idea, like, where does it go? Like, where does your water come in from? Which is a really cool story, actually, because you go out to those cribs out in the, and if you see them out in the distance, but if you've ever been on a boat and gotten close to those things, they're gigantic.
They are huge. And it's really secretive, too. They don't want people to know which one our water comes from.
Right. Because, well, and I understand that.
Yeah.
I think that's, I appreciate their...
I think that's awesome, too.
...their idea there. But when you get next to it, it's like Game of Thrones out there, right? It's like the opening, the credit roll on Game of Thrones. I think they're moving around in circles, and you're like, oh, my God, this thing is like a full castle.
Yeah, it's like a huge building. I mean, like, you know, like an island, you know, right?
Yeah. So then the water goes in there, goes to the filtration plant, then it shows up in your toilet. Now you flush it, now what happens to it? And that is the interesting part of the story, because... It's then flowing, and people, you know, there's a lot of rumors about where it goes, but, you know, where does it actually go? It all ends up in St. Louis, which is good. I mean, that's...
Really?
That's the way that I want to...
It goes that far? So every time you flush, you say, hey, take this, Cardinal fans.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it. That's what the story I tell myself, at least. I do know that it ends up in the, you know, it gets treated, and then it ends up in the river system, and it goes down.
Ah, okay. Okay.
So it's like, you know, I mean, they got a thing that they... It doesn't go out into the lake. That's the most important thing.
Except unless for folks who live down the rivers.
Yeah, well, there have been some, you know, I mean, if you've been out, some of these rivers have it coming. Like the Kankakee River, which starts nowhere and goes nowhere.
Yeah.
And is nothing but just tangled trees, right? And car parts that are floating down
there.
I mean, there's no. It's not like it's picturesque, right?
Yeah, yeah.
CalSec Channel. I mean, that's, you know, we spent a lot of time just looking for blue barrels in there. The whole thing is bad. Man.
It's not good.
No.
I'll tell you what. Now, I used to write science stories when I was younger, so I think our stories are together. We're going to be like that Burnett and whoever the people who made Survivor.
Oh,
okay. So one story that I had was that there's this siege of an army, right? And this general goes out and he poisons the river like upstream, you know, so the invading army has to drink this water that's poisoned. I think that you take that and your toilet story
combine them.
You put them together. I mean, come on. We get Brad Pitt. We get Will Smith.
I like the idea of that. To play us, you mean?
Yeah, they'll play.
Okay. I like the idea of that. But like a buddy film. Like, you know, they got to solve the mystery. All right. Well, you know what? We went from snowfall totals to this. Do you think that this is going to be an impactor of this rush hour? That's my question.
I do. And I don't think that it's going to be necessarily because of heavy snow. I think along I-80, you know, that snow's been falling for a little while there. So I think along I-80, you're going to have some issues. Obviously, that's not really a rush hour thing.
It's snowing downtown right now.
That's the thing. I think that the fact that it's snowing is now going to set off that human, whatever that is,
panic,
domino effect that makes it a horrible traffic commute.
Got it.
Because this snow is going to start to fall. I don't think that it's going to be hard to get through. I don't think that you're going to have much in terms of snow coverage, but it's just going to be slow out there because it's snowing.
All right. Demetrius Ivory, WGN TV Weather. We'll see you at 4, 5, 6, 9, 10, 12, and 14. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Goodbye. All right, we got news from the Northwestern Medicine WGN Radio Newsroom coming your way in 2 little minutes. Ryan Burrow, the WGN reporter and ABC News reporter, has just stepped into the studio of the Rokan Show. That's me, right here on 720 WGN. And Ryan, we sent you, it seemed like a simple enough assignment. We sent you to the Iowa caucuses. It's right down the road here, right? You get on I-80 and just head west until
keep going.
You run into a barn,
truck stop,
right?
Go past that,
and then all of a sudden, the next thing you know, you're at there's a bunch of people standing in a corner, and they're all going, "Oh, I like Bernie. Oh, no, I like Buttigieg." And we thought, okay, you'll be back by Monday night, right? This thing will be wrapped up and adios.
Sure.
So you just got back because they still don't even know what happened here.
No.
Do you have a sense? Was there a sense of confusion where you were?
Oh, gosh. All right. So caucus night went great. It actually went great. The people part of it was fantastic. I was in an armory in Cedar Rapids down in the basement. Mm-hmm. 437 caucusers. It took about 2 hours.
That's about that's on the larger side of caucuses.
Yeah,
right?
It would be. Your top five were the people who were considered viable candidates. We're talking Buttigieg. We're talking Sanders, Warren, Biden, Klobuchar.
Mm-hmm.
Everything went great. It was Pete Buttigieg who ended up winning with 115 of the votes there. And then it went, who did it go after that? It went
Sanders.
Sanders, Biden. No, Klobuchar. Sanders, Warren, Biden. Yeah, it was.
No guess.
Buttigieg.
Bro, don't guess.
Sanders, Klobuchar, Biden was the last
one. Okay, we really don't care. Buttigieg won.
Anyway,
it's all tight, isn't it? It's like it's
done in 2 hours. It was 9:05. Everything had been wrapped up. They were figuring out who the state delegate equivalents would be. Everyone was getting along. Everyone was leaving. It was great. So I'm filing everything for ABC. I'm sending stuff to WGN, and still nothing has been reported. I go up to the precinct chair, and I said, "What's going on here? I'm hearing that nothing's been reported." She says, "We have been on the phone for 40 minutes trying to tally up, send in, record our tabulations, the results, and we've been on hold." And she said that the app didn't work. It didn't work even before we started. We tested it. It didn't work. So they said the backup is just call it in. Well, when you've got 1,700 precincts calling in at the same time,
right?
Apparently not enough people to handle that or the program, the computer program did not work. So I was literally sitting there till 11 o'clock with the precinct secretary. It was just me and her in this empty room. And we
waiting
were listening on hold with her speaker on. I was, of course, on live radio at the time for ABC. And the janitor came in. You guys got to leave. Okay.
All right. I'm sorry. It's union rules. You got to go. Let's talk a little bit about the response that these people had, though. Like you're talking to these caucus organizers, essentially, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the person who was supposed to, the caucus secretary is supposed to call it all in. How frustrated was she by this whole deal?
Super frustrated. I mean, she was mad. I said, can I talk to you about this? Can I interview you? She said, absolutely. Let me finish my sandwich, though. I am super angry right now. And then she came back and she was a little more calm and reserved, but because she ran a pretty good caucus. I mean, everything went well. There were a couple people here or there that had some gripes or complaints, and there was a spoiled ballot or two because someone wrote on page 2 before it was their time to do so. But beyond that, everything went fine. And it was just the call-in that was the problem.
All right. So now, still confused. And they've gotten up to what, 71%?
They're at 75 now.
75. All right. So they gave us 62 yesterday.
Yes.
All in one dump.
Yes.
62%. This is like my medical test. Then it went up to 71% after close to 12 hours, 10 hours. And then they were able to give us another 4% after another 12 hours. I mean, at this point, are we ever going to find out? What could possibly be? Now, one of the things, we were talking to one of the dudes yesterday who said, well, one of the problems was that the caucus secretaries all went home. And some of them, you know, just gave up on reporting, and now we have to track them down.
Yeah.
I mean, how idiotic is that?
Well, I was with the caucus secretary, and they sent her home. And so she's like, I'm just going to stay on hold until someone answers me. So I don't know how that all went, how that all ended up. Well, she at one point, get this, at one point, she was on Verizon service, and it timed out. It wouldn't let her stay on hold. It knocked her out. She had to call back in and get back in the queue. Oh. So she essentially lost her place in line, which freaked her out.
There was a great moment on Monday night on TV. I think it was CNN because it was Wolf Blitzer. Wolf is on the phone with a caucus secretary who's on hold.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, you hear the person answer the phone like, all right, hello, caucus, tell us what the results are. And then then the guy, a little stoner-esque sounding, he's like, Wolf, hold on. They've just picked me up. So hold on. And then he goes over to get the, to talk to the person at headquarters.
Yes.
And they'd hung up on him. I'm going to have to get back on hold. All right. Well, you did yeoman's work. Thank you, man.
No problem.
It was all great.
Yeah.
Ryan Burrow for WGN Radio and ABC News. Fighting the good fight in Iowa, trying to get the story for us. Yeah. Let's check in with Lauren Lapkus, fighting the good fight in the traffic and the weather center. Here is a great Chicago story I want to tell you right now. Because there's a lot of stuff happening in the world that can be very, very disappointing and very, very wacky and very frustrating and weird, including the snow that is now falling in Chicago. But here is a good story. Ravinia, which is one of the, doesn't seem is man-made. It seems it came from heaven and dropped in Highland Park. I don't know why God would put something in Highland Park like that, but he did. And because it's too far of a drive for me, but it is such a beautiful facility for a summer festival of music and comedy and all the other things that happen out there. And sitting on the lawn with your own candelabra and a bottle of wine. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. And this year, this is very exciting, Marin Alsop has just been appointed chief conductor and curator for Ravinia's 2020 season, and she has stepped into the studio right now. And what makes this unique is that in the classical music world, there are not that many female conductors, are there?
Not that many, nope.
And congratulations to you on this. And you'll be conducting the Chicago Symphony Orchestra a couple of times this summer when they come out, right?
That's the great treat about working at Ravinia, to get to work with this phenomenal orchestra.
And would you be the first woman to conduct the Chicago Symphony Orchestra?
I don't think so, but I wish
pretty
I had
pretty close to the first.
To try to look into that a little bit.
The it seems I believe I read that you would be. Pretty close to it. So this is, let's just talk about that. Why are there not? Because when you look at symphony orchestras, you do see a lot of women, right, in positions as musicians. Well, why not conductors?
Well, we see a lot of women nowadays in symphony orchestras. When blind auditions were instituted in the 80s, then women started winning a lot of the positions. But, you know, there's still a real tradition, I think, of keeping a kind of a closed shop. When you think of the Vienna Philharmonic, not until 1997 did they admit women into the orchestra. So having a woman as a leader is still something that is unfamiliar to people. Although I have to say, you know, with the Chicago Symphony, I've never felt any kind of resistance from the musicians or the audiences. And at Ravinia, it's a dream come true. The audience is phenomenal.
Something about the stillness of the air in there. On a beautiful night there, and on a classical night, my parents used to, I would say, drag, but to take me to, because they were huge classical fans, to take me there, and especially you know, sort of the peak of the summer when the sun's going down at 9 o'clock, we'd be out on the lawn and just to have that thing cut, sort of wash across you.
Yeah.
And the dynamics there, the audio dynamics are amazing.
Oh, yeah. They do a beautiful job of getting the sound out to the people on the lawn. But it's one of the most beautiful settings, I think, for any kind of classical or popular music. I mean, Ravinia has it all. There's something for everybody.
That's
there.
True. That's true. I didn't see Anthrax on the card this year, but I wouldn't be surprised. Sometimes those acts are like, you know what? I'm sick and tired of doing stadiums or clubs. So get us sheds. And you are the very, very fancy shed for the summer touring season. All right. When you started as a musician, did you want to be a conductor from the very beginning?
No, I played. My parents were both professional musicians, so I played piano from when I was 2 years old. I retired from piano when I was 6, and then I moved on to violin.
I did too, by the way. I just want to point that out. Yes.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I started when I was 5 3/4.
And that was probably a better move. So then I started violin, and the great thing about playing violin was I got to play in the orchestra. And as soon as I played in the orchestra, I was like, oh, this is cool. I want to conduct this.
So it's like that, right? Because I think there's a lot of kids when they go, like if you go to the doctor's office, you think, I want to be a doctor. Or, you know, you see other people doing things, whatever, pilots or whatever it happens to be. Mm-hmm. So when you're actually in this moment and you basically wanted to be the boss, is it when you stop and you, as a layperson watching this, it seems like, you know, the orchestra's got all the music in front of them and they know what they're doing.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes they're looking up at you and sometimes they're looking down at the music. It is still a bit of a mystery to me to exactly what it is that they are that they're waiting for you to do, or what are they watching of what you're doing?
Are you wondering what the conductor does? Is that
that's a nice way of putting it? Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is it's sort of one of those great mysteries in the universe that the musicians are at such a high level, of course, but there's a joined effort, you know, to motivate and to try to achieve a marquee goal, which is in the name of the music, the name of the composer. And that's really what the conductor is responsible for, is to, you know, enable the musicians to be the best they can be by creating a situation where it's clear what's happening, mm-hmm. the direction of the piece is clear, the colors that they're making sound-wise, you know, because when you get to the level of a Chicago Symphony, you know, it's so malleable that you can do almost anything with the orchestra.
It's like clay, right? You can mold it.
Absolutely. But, you know, the best kind of clay, that kind of thing. So,
does it change night by night?
Oh, yeah. It changes second by second. I mean, that's the beauty of classical music. It exists in that moment only. And it really is, it's different because of each person that's in attendance as well. So the audience is really a big part of our artistic endeavor.
Do you work to the room, like a band would work to a room or a comedian would work to a room? Do you get a sense of how a room is reacting and you want to wake them up a little bit if they're a little... I just know that does happen.
Yeah, but, you know, when you're in charge of, say, 100 people, 120 people, you can't make any sudden moves, really, mm-hmm. you know, because...
They're not anticipating it.
Well, but I do think that we, as the performers on stage, we have a sense of the audience. You know, you have a feeling when they're really focused and when they're really quiet and when they're really engaged. And I have to say that even in an outdoor setting like Ravinia, you know, where you get the trains going by and you get kids running around sometimes, there's still such a sense of ownership and engagement from the audience. That's one of the things I love about working there.
Marin Alsop is who we're talking to. She just appointed chief conductor and curator for Ravinia's 2020 season, beginning in the 2020 season. You're going to be here for a number of years. And one of the few women conductors in classical music in North America.
Well, but I want to say that here in Chicago, you have Mei Ann Chen with the Chicago Sinfonietta, and lots of women are suddenly now
coming in.
And you know, because of the change in the way society is looking at gender equality, you know, women are finally given some opportunity. So I'm very excited about that.
And Leonard Bernstein, do I have this right? Was your mentor?
He was my mentor. He was my hero when I was 9 years old and then became my teacher later
wow.
in life.
How yeah, crazy is that?
And you know, it was fantastic. Last summer, we filmed Bernstein's Mass for PBS, and it's going to be coming out this spring on television. And that was the brilliant idea of Wells Kaufman, executive director there.
who happens to be standing around here. Now, Leonard Bernstein was, you know, in sort of the pantheon of great conductors and figures in classical music. Was he tough as a conductor? Was he a taskmaster?
He could be, but...
Are you tough?
I can result? Be, mm-hmm. but...
Are there laggards? Are there people that you know that at any given moment, if you've got 120 people in front of you and you know there's some guy on the timpani or something that's either the triangle, whatever they got, there's some guy that's just not exactly where they should be, and what do you do about that?
Yeah, well, you know, that's always the challenge of leadership, right? How you manage the stray person. And I would say, you know, at the level I'm conducting, there aren't too many laggards for sure. But watching people like Bernstein in rehearsal, the most important thing is to put the music first and to really not be afraid to be passionate about what we're doing. And the musicians respond to that, all of them.
What are you looking forward to most in 2020 at Ravinia?
Oh, we have some great programs. I'm especially proud, I think, since we've been discussing this issue of gender, to be celebrating the 19th Amendment. And we're doing that with...
100th anniversary.
Yeah, the 100th anniversary. Cynthia Erivo is going... And you can see her on the Oscars. Is it the Oscars coming
yes,
up? Yes,
on Sunday.
Cynthia Erivo, she's a phenomenal performer, and she's doing a show called Legendary Women, and I'm conducting it. And so that really excited about that. I'm doing a silent film with live score, a film from the 30s, Joan of Arc.
So, oh, yeah,
that's going to be cool, too. So, you know, this is a thread that runs through this summer's programming.
I think that's actually a really cool way, too, of introducing people, because so many film scores are based in classical, right? They're based in that form of music. And to introduce people into it and let them know that that's what's happening. I know that CSO had a really successful run. They did Jaws. Right, they were doing the all of the you know the great music from probably the most prolific writer of music in the 20th
John
century,
Williams,
John Williams. Yeah. All right. Well, this has just been an absolute pleasure to have you. Thank you so much for being with us. Because congratulations on everything that is happening here. Because Maren Alsup is now the chief conductor and curator of the Ravinia Festival starting here in 2020. Congratulations on that, and congratulations to Ravinia.
Well, thank you so much, and it's great to be in this beautiful city. Thank you.
I'll move the snow out of the way for you, but we can't do that before we get to the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Coming your way in 2 minutes.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful.
Put all WGN meteorologists on notice to wake up early and be on our show starting at 5 a.m. It's Bob Surratt in the morning on this station.
Radio Chicago, WGN.
That's my turn. Thank you, Antique Lady. All right, listen, we've got important things. We're talking Chicago things. We were just talking about the Ravinia Festival. They, in 3 weeks, 4 weeks, are going to announce their lineup for Ravinia, and it's something this year. I got a little preview. I can't talk about it, but I'm going to tell you, stay tuned for that. That's coming up in the middle of March. All right, coming up in the middle of February, coming up just around the corner, is the 112th. Do I have that right? Edition of the Chicago Auto Show. Yes, the 112th edition of the Chicago Auto Show starts on Saturday. J.C. Phelan is the a member of the board and this year's chairman. J.C., thank you so much for joining us right now on the Super Celebrity Hotline. And this is a fan favorite. This tells you that spring is right around the corner. That's one of the markers that we have as Chicagoans, that you go to the auto show, there's probably snow on the ground, you wait a couple weeks, and then it's basically all cleared up and you're ready to go. And this year, 112th edition, what's new, what's different?
Thanks for having me on, Ro. So we get started Friday night at the First Look for Charity night. And we're really excited about that, where we raise money for 18 local charities. Typically, we're in the neighborhood of about $3 million. And that's a black tie gala. And you could go to firstlookforcharity.org to get tickets to that. And then we have a ribbon cutting 10 a.m. Saturday morning, February 8th. And the show runs through the 17th. We've got 1 million square feet of exhibit space. over 1,000 vehicles. We have 4 test tracks, Toyota, Ram, Volkswagen, and one of the favorites is the Jeep track where you get to to really experience the Jeep course.
Yeah, you go up.
It's a lot of fun.
It's fun. It's also kind of scary. It's weird how scary it is for me. Like, you're inside McCormick Place. You're like, I'm not going to be scared about this. And all of a sudden, you're like on your back going up, straight up a hill. And you're like, wait. Is this thing safe? So it is. It is just a ton of fun. Can I go back to First Look for just a second? This is if for people who don't like. They want to do good charity work because, again, as you mentioned, multiple charities that get benefited from this. And on all kinds of causes, too, whether it's for people with developmental disabilities at Clearbrook or there are other organizations, you know, all the way down through pet adoption and to medical things. I mean, it's just it's absolutely a great way to sort of give to everything to help the Chicago philanthropic community here. But it is also amazing because you get to go to a black tie event. It's great food and you get to do something cool. You don't just have to sit there and listen to a bunch of speeches about, you know, how awful the disease is that you're going to benefit. And because if you're there, you already know the reality is you get to go hang out in the cars and you're there without all of the crowds. The only problem is if you wear tuxedo shoes, it's very slippery. That's the only thing I have noticed. And for over the years, some of the different nameplates here have offered slippers to when you get to to make it more comfortable to walk around, because you're putting a lot of miles on you know, formal shoes, which, you know, mostly are not broken in. So it really is it's a great night, though, and people should do it. And they can just go to your website, right? And the
firstlookforcharity.org.
Yeah,
great entertainment, great food, great drink. Really a neat way to look at some vehicles too.
Very cool stuff. All right, and what is there? Everybody likes to go out and see the all the crazy modern vehicles, the things that we always look at and go, oh, is that going to be on the road in like a couple of years? And people will tell you, yes, they are, but they never really are quite looking like that when they come back out. What are some of those vehicles this year?
So this year we've got they're actually going to have some vehicles that you're going to see on the road very soon that are really hot right now. The Chevrolet Corvette, the Ford Mustang Mach-E, which is an all-electric vehicle, the Audi e-tron, Land Rover Defender, Porsche Taycan. There's a lot of, I think we have almost 20 launches by the manufacturers coming to our show this year, so it's pretty exciting.
And those vehicles are going to be available in the spring, summer, and into the fall, right? Those are all coming.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Any of the concept vehicles, they kind of keep under wraps until they actually get here.
Yeah. Right, exactly. And then sometimes it's just like a half of a car. It's a cut in half. And you're like, oh, that looks cool, I guess. Is there anything autonomous there this year?
Yeah, there will be. I don't have the exact models, but there definitely will be some of those here.
I just want to say, J.C. Phelan, I'm not in favor of that. I will always want to drive my own car. I don't want the computer driving the car. I would like I'd like an opportunity to do that. I'm like the guy that didn't want to get off the horse. I know. I get it, but I still like the idea of it. And that's kind of the fun of going to the auto show, too, is you get to see. There's nothing like seeing a cool cockpit that, you know, that looks different than your car. And you're like, oh, man, I can't wait for it to be like this. I remember when the glass cockpits came out in cars, was it a decade and a half ago? And you were seeing all these screens and you were seeing it looked totally different. Everything was digital. And it's like, and now it's really commonplace.
Right. It's every manufacturer does a great job with technology nowadays. So, and the best part at McCormick Place in February, it's 75 degrees. So it's a great place to take the family get a good look around.
And there's coat rooms too. That's the worst. As you go in there and you don't want to be wearing your coat when it's 75 degrees. So it's a really cool experience. All right. Well, JC, thanks very much for being with us. We appreciate it. And again, the Chicago Auto Show opens to the public on Saturday, February 8th. It runs through President's Day, February 17th. You get the extra day this year. ChicagoAutoShow.com for tickets. If you want to go see First Look, it's firstlookforcharity.org, right?
Exactly.
And that's on Friday night. That's the black tie, very special event that happens before that. But you can get tickets, and that's not really that expensive, and it's really worth it. J.C. Phelan, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Let's check in
with you.
Lauren Lapka, traffic and the weather.
When it comes to the weather, we all want to know, what did Skilling say? Watch for updated forecasts from Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, weeknights on WGN-TV. It's National Weather Person's Day, Ro. Did you know that? Happy National Weather Person's Day, Tom Skilling and Demetrius Ivory.
The weather outside is frightful, but the fire is...
Oh, my God, you hit the post. That's pretty good. I'm a little jealous.
Hey,
that was unplanned. I don't know how that happened.
You did it very, very well. Yes, it is snowing outside, and I am. I got to tell you, I don't like this. I know it's February, and it's supposed to snow. I know that's the whole idea of winter. But I was thinking we were going to sneak past this winter and not really kind of get anything. This does not seem to be. This is like thin, fine snow that is in the air. And it just seems to be a more of a visual hazard. Although, Lauren just said, what on I-80, there was a spin out, right?
So there was a spin out on I-80. That's already cleared. But now there's an accident on I-80 94 blocking two lanes. And there's just reports of a lot of snow on the roadways on I-80, on I-80 94 and 355. And apparently 39, because two semis are overturned over there. Apparently one blew over. And now I'm seeing reports of a jackknife semi on I-55. Around milepost 82.
So in other words, what I'm saying is it really is affecting traffic.
Right.
Is what I should be saying.
Yes.
As opposed to I was thinking, I'm watching things kind of blow by here downtown, but further to the south, that's really where the weather system is focusing now for the first 12 hours. It's going to be south around I-80 and within a couple miles each way. And as you just mentioned, a lot of that stuff that you're talking about there, whether it is I-80, 80-94 in Northwest Indiana. Northwest Indiana always seems to get hit so hard, too, because you've got a lake effect situation that is transpiring as well. So, all right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that.
It's going to be some long traffic reports today, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think there probably are. And at this point, this is, you know, it's a Wednesday. People are deciding, are we going to get out? Everybody's back to work. This isn't a, you know, like a vacation-y kind of time. I mean, we had some weather around the, you know, beginning of January. People weren't all fully back in their jobs yet. And now they are. And this is not what you want. And there's a little more daylight, so you get to see how bad the traffic is, which I think does help a little bit in the beginning of the rush hour. Because what really freaks people out is when it's snowy and dark. Snowy and sunlight or, you know, daylight is somehow makes it go a little bit better.
Well, because when it's dark and then if it's snowing well enough, it kind of blinds you when it's going past your lights. So the lights that would be giving you light on your car don't really help much.
Right. All right. Penny is joining us right now. 312-981-7200. Hi, Penny.
How you doing? Are you doing well in this weather?
No.
Listen, I was behind that spin out on 80. It's not snow. We have ice here in New Lenox and on 80. And I've been on the road 2 hours just to get back to New Lenox. So tell Dimitri it's ice, not snow out here in New Lenox.
You know what? I'm going to pick up the phone right now. And I'm going to beat him with it. You said snow, Demetrius! What are you doing?
No, it is ice out here, and I'm right by 80. It's snow, but the roads are just all ice. It's really dangerous. Have everybody be careful. And, Ro, I'll see you on the beach.
Thank you. I hope so. I hope so sometime soon. Thank you.
Okay, have
Thank
a good
you.
Day.
Right. Bye. Penny's been my lover for years. It's a whole other situation going on there. Thank you, Penny. I got you. So, yeah, this is going to be a wacky rush hour. If you can get out now. I mean, are the other roads I know we were just doing traffic, but we'll do it again right now. In terms of the ones that are heading west and north, are they affected yet? Because the snow isn't going to be quite as big.
Right.
The further north you go, there's not going to be quite as much of, especially over these, tonight's rush hour. It's not going to be weather affected quite as much, but you still, just people freak out.
The only roads right now that they're actually writing that there is snow on the roadway are the I-80s, the ones south, as well as I-57 and 355. So not necessarily anything in terms of straight west or northwest necessarily just yet. I don't know if that will change or if they're going to start getting plows out quick enough to keep that from accumulating. But I would still think they're going to be better than those south pretty much the whole night.
Yeah, and well, the streets are
I don't know if they actually prepared them, as they often do here. The roadways, they prepare them. They put salt down or the chemicals down in advance. But this, downtown at least, it when it's hitting, it's not sticking. It's not the roadways are not do not look snowy. They look wet. And it's one of those sorts of events that starts like this and then it starts to accumulate. So
IDOT did post a picture of Veterans Parkway near Morse Avenue, and you can see a good amount of snow on the roadway. So definitely those areas down there, it's I'm sure there is kind of ice on the roads, at least some slick spots, but also the snow is piling up on top of that, making things worse.
Right, and obscuring it too. So that can make for very dangerous driving conditions. And of course, also when you start to think in situations like this too, that it's just wet, you could have black ice, right? Which is you don't see it, and that can be really, 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 really treacherous. So exercise caution here, because this is a mixed medium storm right now. There is no rain in it, and there's no freezing rain in it, which is good. But it's right on the edge here, because the air temperature is just below freezing, and that can create a situation where you're anticipating that it's going to be water, but it's not. It's going to be ice on the ground. All right. Okay, we'll keep you up to date. Lauren is working very hard behind her screen right now. You know that this is happening because she's got her glasses on. when you see Lauren,
got two screens, got right. The glasses on, I'm good to go.
She's got her blue blocker or whatever those things
blue
are.
Blue light glasses.
Yes, blue light glasses, and she is ready to. She's ready to just keep reading off those screens until the cows come home.
I have sensitive blue eyes. Leave me alone.
Okay, is that the problem? All right.
Yeah,
that's
they
the
hurt.
Coming up. these kids. Coming up, listen to this. In Naperville, they're not going to let you go to a pet store and buy a pet from a breeder. When you go to a pet store in Naperville, you are going to have to buy a rescue dog, not a bred dog from any kind of breeding operation, legitimate or otherwise. How about that? So we'll find out if that does that sound. I don't know if that sounds right to me, because people are still going to use breeders, right? Because there are. I mean, that's it. That's what people. That's like the whole deal now is to go out and get the specially bred dogs that are. And it's so funny. I mean, I think the first dog that I paid for was like $60. And now there's dogs that are like, especially if you walk around in the city and you've got these dogs that are, that they're a something oodle, whatever it is. It just ends in an oodle. A Shih Tzu oodle. It's those things. I mean, there's like, oh, what is that? Well, that is my Shih Tzu oodle. I paid $6,000 for it. Again.
Should call it a zoodle.
But people just want to do that. They just want to tell you how much they paid for their dog. But they're changing the rules in Naperville. We'll talk about that coming up on the other side. But first, we have got the news and the weather and the traffic from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2 minutes. Rokan Show, 720 WGN. Naperville is banning the sale of dogs and cats from commercial breeders. So if you go to a pet store and you would like to buy a dog or a cat, you would have to go through and adopt a shelter pet process. And right now, Joe McElroy is with us. He's a board member of Adopt and one of the proponents of this new rule in Naperville. Joe, thanks for being with us. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ro. It's an honor to be on GN.
How did you come up with this? What was the precipitating factor?
Well, the city council came up with it basically because of input from the residents. It's been going on for several years. These humane ordinances are something that's sort of you're seeing more and more of it. I believe Naperville will be the 11th city to have what's called a humane ordinance, which, as you just described, prohibits selling dogs and cats from commercial breeders. You can still go to pet stores. We have a store in Naperville now called Dog Patch that used to sell dogs and cats from commercial breeders, but for ethical reasons, he decided he just couldn't do that anymore. But you can go in there tomorrow and have your choice of many nice dogs, and you will be able to buy them from these types of places, knowing that they've been, you know, checked out and are going to be healthy.
And these are shelter dogs. These are,
yes.
Okay, so
yes.
These would be dogs that were otherwise that would have come instead of going to a shelter per se. You would go to this store. Now these shelters, a lot of them are nonprofit. So
right.
Why would somebody go to a for-profit business to buy a shelter pet when they could actually just go to a shelter and help a nonprofit?
Well, because our shelter dogs, you know, it's still an expense. I think we paid $350, $400 for our beagle from Adopt 3 years ago. And the reason for that is our dog, our beagle Baxter, as did so many other dogs around here, came up from Arkansas somehow, along with a bunch of other dogs. This happens all the time. Showed up, ended up at Adopt, and was 5 years old, had not been neutered. So most of the money that we spent was getting that guy healthy and getting him neutered and getting him, you know, getting ready. So it really is going to be pretty much the same. You can still go to a shelter. You can still go to pet stores that get dogs and cats from shelters. It's just a matter of now you will be able to buy a dog or cat in Naperville with more confidence that it is not going to have significant problems.
Okay, so what do you mean significant problems?
Medical problems. I was with a dog today that she's 2 years old. She was apparently in a puppy mill, but it's always hard to tell the exact details of the backstories because the dogs can't talk. But the owner could tell that this dog had been kept up in a cage so narrow that she could barely spread out, and so now she's got bad legs. So this owner decided to take that chance, even though she knew that there were problems. But for most people, you know, you don't want to buy a pet that you know has serious problems.
Right.
And so,
but what if people want? What if people are looking for? And I know because this is a big. I'm sure it's a big thing in Naperville. They want purebred, whether it's retrievers or they want bulldogs or whatever it happens to be that people are looking for, or any of the doodle woodle world. I mean, they'll still be able to buy those from breeders outside of Naperville and bring them back to Naperville, right?
Well, they could go to a commercial breeder outside of Naperville. There's nothing we can do about that. And as one of our fellow board members said, we can't boil the ocean. But regarding breeds, our dog is as near as I can tell, a purebred beagle. And there's so many rescue dogs available that if you want a collie, you can go to... There's an organization that does rescue collies and find whatever breed you want. So it doesn't mean that you are limited to just whatever happens to show up in the shelter.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's an interesting twist on all this. Joe McElroy, board member of the Adopt Pet Shelter in Naperville, and Naperville has now banned the sale of dogs and cats from commercial breeders in the stores there. Essentially, I mean, you could still have you could go to a commercial breeder if you wanted to and bring the dog in, but they will not be sold in stores in Naperville. All right, Joe, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Check in now. Lauren Lapka, she's got the traffic and the weather. Coming up in the top 5 on the Rokan Show, why you should never announce that you have the coronavirus on a crowded plane. You might want to stay tuned for that little piece of audio. All right, we were talking about this new rule in Naperville. You cannot go to a pet store and buy a pet from a pet store that is not a shelter pet. It has to be a shelter pet. It can't be from a breeder, a commercial breeder. And I don't know. I'm conflicted about this because I know there's a lot of people who want to get a specific breed of a dog. And yes, there are. I'm all for saving a life and the shelter pets and all that. This is not a shot at shelter pets or saying that a shelter pet isn't worthwhile. And in a lot of ways, I believe that shelter pets know that they've been rescued. They behave in a different way. And they're also differently acclimated to their surroundings. Sometimes they're still wearing the scars of abuse. But in other cases, the families just couldn't handle them or whatever it is. And I think they get a sense of what they have been through and then how that connects with the person that has adopted them. I've almost never seen it fail. However, I think people should still have the option, if they would like, to be able to go to a store. If the store is using reputable breeders, and I mean that is one of the problems, but I just think that this is maybe too restrictive. Kate, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Kate.
Thank you. There are breeders, and I have firsthand knowledge of this, sadly, that say they're breeders, but they are not certified, or they have fake certification, or they have fake records. I have a dog right now. She's the second Irish Setter that I have. First one was also abused, but nowhere near this sweetheart. She was in a cage for 5 years, couldn't lie down, only could sit, and stopped eating, and the woman was going to put her down, and I said, nope, just give her to me. And she is a darling, and she's grown, actually, at age 9. Well, I got her at age 8.
Kate, let me ask you a question. How did you know that she had been in a cage for 5 years?
The woman told me.
And this is the woman who was
aged.
This is the one who was keeping her before. This is her
That's,
owner. Yeah.
Yes, I'm sorry, I'm unclear. She raises, God help me if she hears this, but I've tried to shut her down so many times. She raises Irish Setters, and now the very beautiful blonde white Golden Retrievers. And if she runs out of time with them, and she doesn't have anybody who wants them, she puts them down. I'm just telling you this because there are more people who fake it than people realize. And the other part is, it's wonderful to go to breeders. I actually have gone to breeders twice for another kind of dog years ago. Another type, English Springer Spaniel, and they're first rate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the thing. I want to get to is, I mean, there are a lot of, and Kate, thank you for telling the story. There are a lot of reputable breeders. That's the other piece here. Yes, there are some people who do the wrong thing, but there are some really great, loving families that breed specific breeds of dogs, whatever it happens to be. I mean, you can find them all over the Midwest, these people who do it. And sometimes they're a rare breed, sometimes they're more common breeds, but they really take their time and they treat these animals really, really well. And it seems to me that people who actually work in that business, and sometimes, you know, I mean, it's like when I bought from breeders before, they're always 2.5 hours driving distance away. I don't know why it's always 2.5 hours from downtown, but it is. And they may work in other businesses, but they do this as a part-time deal. And they have lovely homes with these lovely dogs. And they have, you know, they'll have a litter of, you know, one or two litters a year. And then they, you know, they advertise on the internet and they find people who are going to come out and do it. And you come out and you visit them and you visit the dogs. They got a lot of land. And I've had really, really positive experiences with that. And I just hate to see that go away or that to get penalized against puppy mills. There's no question that we would like to see puppy mills go away. And that's a little bit of what, or not a little bit, part of what the Naperville ordinance here is trying to do, where Naperville is going to make it illegal to, or you're not going to be able to buy, they're banning the sale of commercially bred puppies at pet stores. You just will be able to get shelter animals at pet stores, dogs and cats. Dave, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Dave.
Good afternoon, Joel and Raul. I'm just wondering if this ordinance or rule is going to perpetuate the problem. I know many responsible breeders that in their contract, it states that if the purchaser doesn't want the dog anymore, that gets returned to the breeder, and the breeder will then bear the responsibility of rehoming the dog. I think that when you just make a rule that you can only take on a shelter pet, that perpetuates irresponsible breeding.
Right. Well, yeah. I'm not sure I follow that 100%, but I do think that there are, but responsible breeders need to be rewarded for what they're doing, right? Because, right. I mean, there, yes, there are puppy mills, and there are people who are breeding dogs, and it's one of the reasons, you know, that you have such a large community of pit bull rescues or bulldog rescues because you know, they're bred specifically for something, and then if they don't meet the challenge or whatever it happens to be, and then they're just let out in the streets and stuff like that. I mean, I understand the need for that completely, but in terms of breeding, there's all kinds of breeds out there that people want and desire. And to say, well, no, you can't get that. And there's, you can tell which, you know, what are the hot ones right now. You go to a dog park and you see, you know, every dog named Lucy is like an Australian Shepherd, or that's very hot right now. The English Bulldog, very hot right now. And some sort of it's a Bernedoodle thing, that it's like it's a Bernese Mountain Dog and a Woodle Doodle. Very hot. And people want them. And they want the hypoallergenic ones. I mean, that's a big deal for people. I would hate to see the restrictions actually complicate the situation for these people who work in the business, for these families who go and they invest in breeding these dogs in small breeding operations, or for the puppies themselves. I mean, why do we have to make this complicated for Duke and Lucy and Baxter the Beagle we heard about earlier? All right, coming up on the other side, we got a top five of five that you won't believe. We'll take you through what happened today in Washington in the top five of five, as well as why you should never announce that you have the coronavirus on a crowded airplane. Now, one would think that that would be sort of a second nature thing. You would know that already. But in case you don't know that, in case you're wondering if it's a good idea to say that you have the coronavirus on a crowded airplane, even if you don't have the coronavirus, especially if you don't have the coronavirus, then you will learn from the top five of five why that isn't exactly going to work out for you. All right. Okay. All that is coming away. But first, we have news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Kim Gordon stands by there in 2 minutes.
Radio Chicago, this is AM 720.
WGN.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right, we'll do it. Rokan Show right here. Top five, five, five most, interesting, improbable, entertaining things that you might hear in a given day. Or newsworthy. Sometimes it's just newsworthy. And that's where it all starts right here. Checking in at... technical. It's a technical. We had a technical, Kevin.
Classic technical difficulty.
Checking in at...
number five.
Senate acquitted President Trump of abusing his power of office and obstructing Congress. Today, ending the third presidential impeachment trial in American history. Now, Republicans and Democrats had appeared to be marching toward an entirely party-line vote. But then came Senator Mitt Romney, Republican of Utah, presidential candidate, you might recall, in 2012. He became the only Republican lawmaker to join Democrats in voting to convict the president on one count, and that was the abuse of power count. Because he called the actions of the president an appalling abuse of public trust.
The allegations made in the articles of impeachment are very serious. As a senator juror, I swore an oath before God to exercise impartial justice. I am profoundly religious. My faith is at the heart of who I am. I take an oath before God as enormously consequential. I knew from the outset that being tasked with judging the president, the leader of my own party, would be the most difficult decision I have ever faced. I was not wrong.
He went on to talk about, in an interview print interview about what kind of an impact this is going to have, not just on him, but on his wife, on his kids, on his grandkids, and maybe even their kids, his great-grandkids, as he moves forward. But he had to vote his what he saw as his conscience and what he saw as his duty to himself and to his God and to the country. And so it's quite a moment. Donald Trump Jr. already tweeted out within the last 2 hours that Mitt Romney should be excised from the Republican Party for doing what he did. So I can see, and I've not seen the president's reaction to Mitt Romney specifically. I don't know that there has been one yet. I haven't seen that crossing. But it's certainly the in a moment now where, now that this is all over, and we are now in an election year, which we were anyway, this gives the president an opportunity to go out and say that he was exonerated. He'll say completely exonerated. It was interesting that his lawyers, we just heard that in the top of the hour news, Jay Sekulow, was saying that it was one vote on one, only one vote to convict on one count. Well, one Republican vote to convict on one count. The Democrats were fairly unanimous in this. We're unanimous in this. So this ends this moment in American history. And it ended exactly as it was predicted to have ended. But now it's up to the American people to make a decision about what they heard, whether they support the president and everything that he has and the job they think he has done, or whether they don't support the president's job and they would like to see him ousted, or they supported the president's job but now believe that he may have crossed a line. That's really the question. And that's going to be, I think, that third category is going to be the differential here in the vote coming up in November. So we'll see. And it also depends on who the Democrats end up choosing, because we will still, I will bet you that we'll be in the last week of October, right before the Tuesday in November, and we will still not know what happened in the Iowa caucuses from 8 months prior. All right, let's do this. Let's, or 9 months prior. Let's check in with Lauren Lapka. She's got the traffic and the weather. Then we'll get to your 4, 3, 2, and 1. Top 5 of 5 continues. We're up to
number 4.
Now, Chicago firefighters are upset, and rightfully so. They were marching downtown today because there was an exam that was being given, an elevation exam for new lieutenants and battalion chiefs. And during the exam, it was canceled because of a computer glitch. And they're blaming a third-party city vendor that was involved in this. 1,600 firefighters have been attempted to get tested here for this. And there's been a shortage of firefighter captains, lieutenants, and chiefs. The last exam was held, listen to this, 11 years ago. And because there is a shortage of bosses, essentially, white shirts, that there has not been, the people are working overtime. It's been a stress on the entire fire department. And the firefighters have had it up to here.
That's what we're all wondering. We don't know why it's so difficult to give an exam. We're all very disappointed and frustrated.
What it does is it puts additional stress on the membership to try to perform during these 24-hour shifts. In addition, it creates overtime, which if you were to hire, you would eliminate.
Yeah, that is true. You know, we spend a lot of time in the city, in the politics of the police department and in the politics of the politicians of this town, the aldermen, but the firefighters who are the spine in a lot of ways here of the city. You know, you talk about public safety, obviously, you know, Chicago police, they're on the front lines, but when things go wrong, who's responding to it? Firefighters are responding to it. EMT paramedics are responding to it. EMTs, you know, every fire truck in Chicago is carrying EMTs on it. Most of the rigs, more than half the rigs of ambulances in this town are 2 paramedics. You don't get that in major cities. You don't get that kind of level of protection. And you don't get the life-saving numbers or the vertical rescue numbers that other cities get. Here, this city is so much better. So outperforms the other fire departments around the world. It is astounding. And they're doing it without the attention that they really deserve or the respect to be able to get a to be able to get an exam done, to have a computer exam be canceled in the middle of the exam as they're trying to get people into jobs that some of them have been waiting almost a decade to ascend to. I mean, it's ridiculous. So I know that there's a lot on the mayor's plate here, but this is certainly something that needs to be paid attention to. Because I'm going to tell you this right now. With it, there is no question that when we have seen these decreases in the murder rate, a lot of that has to do with the work of the Chicago Fire Department, because they're the ones saving those lives of people. So that's just a shooting and not a murder. So think about that and thank them when you see them as well.
Number three.
All right. You may have heard of celebrities or multi-billion dollar companies donating money to cover students' lunch debt. Right? This has been a big issue where there's schools where the kids can't eat because their parents didn't help them or they weren't able to come up with the money for their lunches, and then they accrue debt in the lunchroom, and then they can't eat. So there's a bunch of people have been jumping in trying to help out. Along comes Kiani Ching from Vancouver, Washington, an 8-year-old who wanted to help his schoolmates by selling handmade keychains for $5 a piece. You know how much this kid made? $4,000 doing that. And he erased that school debt from his, that lunchroom debt from his school. Now, Keone was ultimately inspired by San Francisco 49ers player Richard Sherman, who previously had played for the Seahawks, and donated more than $27,000 to a similar cause.
I know a lot of people that eat hot lunch a lot, and they run out of lunch money like I did once. Because if people don't have a packed lunch and they don't have enough lunch money, they will starve. I've passed all my goals so far, and the goal for the lunch debts.
Wow. How about that? There's a kid who should be getting the Medal of Freedom. When I'm president of the United States, I'm going to have that kid at the State of the Union. I'm going to give him the Medal of Freedom right there. It's a new thing to do. And a brand new car. All right. Checking in at
number two.
Saw is back. Did you like the original Saw movies? I'm not a gigantic fan of them.
The first one was terrifying, though. And then after that, I was like, well, where are they going with this?
Again, it's only so many
games he can play.
Right. It's a Saw. Okay, I get it. It's a Saw and it's killing people. Okay, fine. Now, this is interesting. Saw is back. And you know who's producing and writing this new Saw? Chris Rock. What? Yes. He came up with the story for the project. He's going to star as a police detective investigating a string of sadistic murders, and he's putting in it Samuel L. Jackson and Max Minghella.
What do you got there?
Oh, it's just my wife, Emma. This is my son, Charlie.
Enjoy it while it lasts.
While it lasts.
Nothing happier than the wife of a new detective.
Emma's cool, man. She's different. You don't know my wife.
You give a woman 600 Tuesdays. It ain't worth 3 Saturday nights.
All available units, officer down.
Detective Banks en route. Whoever did this has another motive. They're targeting cops.
You want to play games, mother?
Oh, I don't know how I feel about that. Been playing a lot with movie clips over the last number of months for the podcast that Richard Roper and I have been doing on the greatest movies of all times. And that right now, I'm going to tell you, I can just tell you right now. And I know about trailers and movie clips and whether or not the movie's going to be good. I can tell like that. Not going to work. And finally,
number one,
a bonehead. There's no other way to describe this guy, but bonehead who decided he wanted to have a viral internet moment. Announced that he was infected with the coronavirus in the middle of a flight on the way from Toronto to Jamaica. This was a WestJet Airlines flight. It had to turn around and go back to Canada. He then got arrested, of course. James Pottock thought the prank would be the start of internet stardom. But no one was laughing, and instead, the crew quickly donned on face masks, and then they booed this idiot off the flight.
Woo-hoo! Oh, they got you on camera, too.
You're a clown, man.
Seriously, you didn't say it.
All right. Now, when he got arrested, he got booked, and then he sat down with a TV news station in Toronto, and he did an interview.
I fly to Jamaica 5 times a year. One time, a couple trips ago, I did a similar thing. I pulled my phone out. I made a viral video. I got up. I said, can I have your attention? Can I have your attention? Everyone stopped and looked. And I said, Lil Wayne's new album just dropped. Everybody go get it. No problem with that. Sat back down, landed. Everybody got off. No issues. Seemed to me like this was in poor taste in retrospect.
Oh, my God. Really? And, you know, that is such a Canadian thing to do, by the way. I just want to point out, by apologizing, but, you know, it does seem to me like maybe this was in poor taste. Really? I don't think poor taste is the word I would use.
What I did, I stood up. I said, can I have everybody's attention? I just came back from Hunan province. That was it.
Why would you say that?
Well, I had my camera with me. I was looking to get a viral video. I was looking to get it up on all the social media platforms. I figured it would invoke some type of reaction, not on the plane, more people seeing on social media going, wow, this kid's is crazy, whatever it is. I was looking to create a video, yes, that would go viral.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For what purpose, though, to go viral?
I'm an artist.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any publicity for myself is good publicity.
Yeah. I think you're more of an a-hole. If I could use like a word that would start with an A, that would be more of the case. And there's one more of this doofus? Oh, God.
What I did was wrong. I ruined the flights for 200 and some odd people. I ruined their flight. They've charged me criminally. And, yeah, I have court to go to. There's all types of positions, people that are happy, people that are upset, but in the end, I ruined the people on the plane's trip.
Yes, you did.
So I'm extremely apologetic.
Yeah. And again, very Canadian. He's apologizing. Like in America, don't apologize for this. You mean mug the camera when it goes by you. But still, what a moron. Let's close this thing up.
The top five at five.
Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. News out of Hollywood, and it's sad news, but it is not unexpected. Kirk Douglas has passed away. He was 103 years old. Kirk Douglas was born before the end of World War I. And in his career that actually does span actively 70 years of Hollywood, and it, actually from first to end, it's almost 80. He was one of the most bankable stars, certainly one of the most prolific actors of all times, vital. He was a true actor as well as a character. He shared the screen with John Wayne, with Cary Grant, Jimmy Stewart. That era of film stars, of movie stars, and yet, and most of those film stars died decades and decades ago. And he went on, of course. He's the father of Michael Douglas, who has had an amazing career in and of himself. And I got the distinct pleasure to spend some time with Michael Douglas a couple of years ago at an event. And he talked about his dad. It was the whole point of the event was talking about his father's incredible story of growing up in New York as a young immigrant and his family of immigrants. And it was born Isser Danilovich Dembski in Amsterdam, New York. And his parents, hold on a second, now my Siri wants to talk to me about something. She just will not leave me alone. And he had the most amazing life story. And he wrote a book, best-selling autobiography in 1988, The Ragman's Son, in which he discussed what it was like to grow up in New York at that era, especially in the 1920s, where anti-Semitism and racism were still very much alive and work his way out. His parents didn't speak English. He had to learn English on the streets. He had to learn how to lose his accent because he did not grow up in a house that spoke English. It was he just had this most amazing life story and was in some of the most important films of all times. Here's a clip from him in the greatest of World War I films, Paths of Glory.
Colonel Dax, how would you like General Miro's job?
His what, sir?
His job.
Let me get this straight, sir. You're offering me General Miro's command?
Come, Colonel Dax, don't overdo the surprise. You've been after the job from the start. We all know that, my boy.
I may be many things, sir. I'm not your boy.
Well, I certainly didn't mean to imply any biological relationship.
I'm not your boy in any sense.
You're trying to provoke me, Colonel?
Why should I want to do that?
Exactly. It would be a pity to lose your promotion before you get it. A promotion you have so very carefully planned for.
Sir, would you like me to suggest what you can do with that promotion?
Colonel Dax! You will apologize at once or I shall be placed under arrest.
I apologize for not being entirely honest with you. I apologize for not revealing my true feelings. I apologize, sir, for not telling you sooner that you're a degenerate, sadistic old man. And you can go to hell before I apologize to you now or ever again.
Kirk Douglas, dead at the age of 103. Let's check traffic and weather with Lauren Lapka. All right. Rokan Show, right here at 720 WGN. Just bringing you the news that Kirk Douglas has passed away, the legendary actor. Originally from New York City, and started actually in the film industry when he was a little older. He was 29 years old when he got his first major film role. But over the years, had appeared in films starting in the 1930s. Actually, 1946 was his first starring role. All the way to 2008. Now think about that. That is an amazing. You know, many people don't live that long, and he had a career that spanned that much time. So, an amazing thing. We'll hear from Richard Roper tomorrow more on the life and the legacy of Kirk Douglas. All right, this story: artificial intelligence can predict a person's chances of dying within a year by looking at heart test results, even when they look normal to doctors. And the problem with this is that nobody seems to be able to explain how this artificial intelligence algorithm can do that. Brandon Fortwalt at healthcare provider Geisinger in Pennsylvania says that colleagues have tasked an artificial intelligence algorithm with examining about 1.75 million EKGs, electrocardiograms, from 400,000 people to predict a higher risk of death within a year. And these cardiogram records show a pattern of heart attacks and AFib and all those kinds of things that can happen. And when they look at the raw data and they look at a combination of the patient's age and gender, they are multiple times more likely to predict an accurate assumption of risk. That is absolutely crazy. Doctors look at it and go, no, you're going to be fine. I mean, how many times have you heard the story? But, you know, you're like in a doctor's office and the doctor goes, hey, no problem. You're fine. Go ahead. We'll see you in a year. And that year never comes. Oh, Uncle Morty went just like that. And it's one of those situations where I don't know that I'd want to know, though. See, this is my only problem. I don't like the idea that science is going to tell me, and we're eventually going to get to this. Science is going to give me a range of this is when it's all over for you. I mean, do you really want to know?
No, I'm good.
I like the idea of not knowing. I like the idea of just assuming it's going to go on for, like Kirk Douglas. It was going to go on forever. He's 103. He didn't think he was going to. He had a massive stroke. And he came back from a massive stroke a decade and a half ago. And he came back from that. They said, it was all over. I like the idea of it. I don't want to, nobody telling me. No. And then what's worse is if anybody else finds out about it and they know, but you don't know, Like, I'm going to tell you right now, there's a lot of guys out there who are thinking, oh, my God, don't let my wife know when I'm going to die because she's just going to plan on it. And insurance companies, if they figure it out. I just don't like this. This is all heading in a way where the human is no longer going to have any kind of autonomy. And the idea that we were autonomous human beings, that we could, that we had self-will and determination and the romantic notion in our heads that, yes, we could probably live as long as we wanted, or we would have this level of success, or we would be able to live our dreams. And now some computer is going to tell us that, no, none of that can happen. You're going to be a failure. You're going to die at this, you know, on this particular date. I mean, think about this. And this is brand new technology that has just come on board. And it's already out-predicting doctors by leaps and bounds in terms of people's life expectancy. That's it. That's, I just, I, we got to stop this whole thing right now before the computers all turn on us and kill us. I mean, if someone said to you, Kevin Powell,
mm-hmm.
I'll tell you exactly when it is.
Nah, I'm good.
You know, barring an accident or something else like that.
I don't want to know.
Yeah.
It takes the fun out of it. It's like knowing the ending to a movie. Like, what if you were walking into the theater and they're like, guess what? He was dead the whole time. What? It loses the excitement.
Yes, that's very true. That's, yeah.
You know, life keeps you on the edge of your seat at all times.
Right.
This would totally ruin the fun.
Yes, and then a countdown to death, I think, is a very, very bad idea.
Although that could be kind of fun.
No, no.
Guys, it's the last day.
Well, I mean, there's always that thought.
Let's go nuts.
I have to admit that I have lived a few days like that.
Right.
You know, where I've just assumed, you know, pending a test result or other kinds of things. And I was.
So did you like cry in the fetal position at home, or did
no.
you go like party?
No, I, you know, it was interesting. I actually did have this. This happened about seven years ago, where I had an incident and, you know, I had to go in for a test and they were like, okay, this is, you know, they were thinking it was a particularly bad thing.
If it's positive, you're dead in a week.
I mean, I go to my doctor, and my doctor, I was having this, you know, like chest symptom, and my doctor goes, you're going to the emergency room right now. I go, I'm what? They gave me an EKG, and they said, there's something, you know, totally wacky going on with your heart. And they sent me over to the Northwestern Medicine emergency room, which is right next to the Northwestern Medicine newsroom. And so I had to go get a test, right? They give you a test to see, it's a blood test, to see if you're, you know, kicking off all of these hormones when you're having a heart attack. And, you know, I'm like in my 40s, and I'm like, what the hell? It couldn't possibly be happening to me. But you know, it kind of had that moment. And they, so I'm sitting there in the waiting. They sent me out of the emergency department to go sit in chairs in the waiting room and wait for this. And I thought, well, I am not going to sit here and wait for this. You know, they're going to come out and say, you know, that we're going to bring you in and we're going to do this or do that. I mean, I started to feel okay. As soon as they told me I was dying, I started to feel okay for the first time. That was the damnedest piece of it.
It's the unknown part that makes
it
weird.
It was like, right. It was like all of a sudden I go, well, this could be fatal. And I go, well, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm going to go out and have a drink. And that was kind of the way I looked at it. And it's really an interesting thing. Because and it turned out I didn't, and I'm okay. I had other issues that they had to address.
You're still having a good run.
Yeah, it's 7 years later. I'm pretty good, but it was one of those moments where you have that thing where you're like, okay, when I least expected it, I thought it was relatively healthy. Don't take, you know, the best care of myself, as we often talk about on this program. But I walked out of there and I thought, I'm going to change the way I live a little bit. Not in terms of lifestyle, but I'm going to realize that, you know, tomorrow's not promised to anybody, because I was worried about all these other things in the future. What am I going to do here? What am I going to do there? And I did have that moment when I was like, I called a few people and I'm like, I'm not quite sure where this is going. And, you know, you call your family and you let them know. And it's like, there's kind of a relieving thing to it, you know, to let go of the fear of it. But having said that, I still do not want a computer to tell me the exact time and day that I'm going to drop dead of what would be a natural cause. Not getting hit by a Metro train. By the way, I'm sorry to bring Metro into this, but I did. All right. Well, there you have it. Science is about to be able to predict when you die. something that to make you all feel better in the middle of this traffic nightmare that you're living in. And we'll have details on that, the snow moving through, the traffic and all that in the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in 2 minutes. It's the Rokan Show right here on 720 WGN. All right, our old friend Pat Brady has just stepped into the studio. Used to run the Illinois Republican Party. How'd that go for you?
Well, you know, we got him right where we want him. Yeah. The Democrats have super majorities and a governor.
Yeah, you did a really nice job with
Thank
that.
You.
All right, now, you're here. A couple things I want to ask you, actually, about this absolute cluster in Iowa. That's coming up in just a few minutes, because you were with us in Iowa when we were covering it 4 years ago, and you introduced us to all of the Iowa muckety-mucks, and now they figured out exactly how to screw the whole deal up. Well, at least the Democrats screwed it all up. Republicans kind of got it right, but they didn't have much to do, right? I mean, it was contested, though. Wasn't
4 years ago, Rick Santorum didn't think they got it right.
Yes.
Remember?
Yes, that was right. Rick Santorum was... well. No,
that was 8 years ago.
8 years ago.
8 years
ago. Yeah. When he was running, and they for 2 weeks they couldn't tell him exactly what was going on. All right, but before we do that, you're here to promote something that's near and dear to your heart. The Lincoln Forum and the Union League Club of Chicago are partnering to present a high-profile civic affairs program series. Nothing screams excitement like high-profile civic affairs program series. Unfortunately, for me, this actually is going to be a very fun thing. It's a conversation between Susana Mendoza, who's the Illinois Comptroller, and she is a ball of fire, and she's mad at everybody about everything.
Right. She's a great speaker.
She's taking no prisoners right now.
Yep.
She is, because she's mad at the Democrats for the stupid stuff that's going on down in Springfield, and she's mad at the Republicans. She's mad at everybody. And then our friend, Republican House Leader Jim Durkin, who's an amazing, he's also a really dynamic guy, and he's a member of the Durkin Brothers, which is sounds like a bluegrass band, but it isn't. They drink like one, though. And they are a very, these are guys that, you know, judges and lawyers and all of that. And Jim is an amazing legislator. He's been in the state legislature for almost 2 decades.
Yeah, and a good guy, too. But it's more than that, actually. The partnership with Union League Club is what we wanted to announce. We've been doing this for about 18 months now. We're getting not just those speakers, but we have Tony Prekwick lined up. We have the governor's coming in sometime in the spring. So we have a full slate of some of the biggest policymakers and leaders in the state. And the whole concept was that we wanted to have a public policy discussion where it's not screaming and yelling, where we have allow our audience to ask questions in an environment where they're not going to get screamed back at.
Oh, then I'm not invited.
No, you're not. You can go. Just have to sit in the back.
That's really funny. That's funny because, you know, there were a couple times that you guys came to me and were like, hey, you know, we're going to do this. Are you available to moderate? And unfortunately, my schedule did not allow me to do that for the few times that you asked. And then you just stopped asking because I understand why in a situation like that. But now I realize that you're stopped asking because I'm just going to cause trouble.
No, we'd love to have you back. You obviously are tuned in, and as boring as it may sound the way you described it, it actually is very interesting. We've had some great events. Actually, our first was with our friend Sheriff Darton. We've had a whole great lineup from Brett Baer to Sheriff Darton. It just continues and continues to grow. But
yes.
The big news is the partnership with the Union League Club.
All right. And so this one that's coming up here, when is this one that's
coming? It's Monday, LincolnForum.org.
If you want to go. It's just a luncheon, right?
It's a luncheon, yeah. It's kind of, we switched our format from an evening event to a lunch event.
Oh, that makes it available. And now I'm available for some of those.
Yes, and we can start drinking at lunch instead of in the evening because served drinks before. But,
oh, God.
Yeah, so we're very excited about it, and we're getting a great feedback. But LincolnForum.org if you want to come. And we kick off this season with Representative Jim Durkin.
Okay. All right, that's very interesting.
Thank you.
Now, see if we can get Kim Fox, because I would like to interview
Kim Fox.
You know, she was supposed to be on this program on Monday.
Oh, did she not show?
She did not show.
Well.
Now, it was an interesting thing.
I think she's in trouble.
Yeah.
I think politically she's in trouble.
Well, I find this very interesting, Pat Brady, former head of the Illinois Republican Party. And I like to just say, in parentheses, how did that go? But what I find fascinating is that she agreed to the interview. We got called, and we've been asking. We asked all the candidates for Cook County State's Attorney to appear on their show, and her press person called back and said, "Oh yeah, she'll be available." This was last week. She'll be available on Monday at 6 o'clock. She'll be there, and I thought, man, okay. I thought she was going to dodge me the whole time. I didn't think that, and I actually respected that. I respected also that in her TV commercial, she looks like two different people in a TV commercial. She has like a stand-in for herself.
Yeah, she steps in one side, she steps in the Jesse Smollett stuff, and then the other side, she steps in the Ed Burke donations. She's really, politically, I think,
She's got wide, big tentacles.
Well, she has nowhere to go. And then, actually, this Bill Conway is an impressive guy, and I think his ads have been tremendous, and they point out just the things. To me, it's almost similar to Jack O'Malley when he won Beat Cecil Partee back in the early 90s. All this controversy, state's attorney, and it was a big upset at the time, but he ended up doing it. I think that's what we're looking at here, maybe with this Bill Conway.
All right, so this is a question that is being asked in high circles. Should the Iowa caucus be turned into a primary and moved to Illinois to be the first in the nation? We're going to talk about that with Pat Brady, but first let's now check in with Lauren Lapka. She's got the horror of the roads and the skies right now.
For News at 10, watch WGN, Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling. For TV News at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Very welcome.
Excellent job, as always.
Thank you. Appreciate
it. All right. Our friend Pat Brady is in the studio with us. He used to run the Illinois Republican Party, and he's also a member of this Lincoln Forum, one of the founders of the Lincoln Forum. And there's a speaker series going on, and coming up on Monday, they've announced this partnership with the Union League Club in Chicago, downtown, beautiful old, athletic club and dining rooms and things like that. It's one of the great historic buildings and clubs in Chicago. And it all kicks off with Jim Durkin, the Republican leader in Springfield in the House of Representatives, and Susana Mendoza in a conversation. So people want to go to that. But it goes on throughout the season here of all kinds of different speakers and Q&As and things like that. So if you're interested in public policy or politics, or just want to get up there and yell at somebody, that is the perfect place to do it while you have a cocktail at lunch and some shrimp cocktail. Okay, let's talk about the Iowa caucus for a second, because, you are a state party leader. You understand what it's like, because elections, come under your purview. What must it be like for the Democrats in Iowa right now? They have screwed the pooch in such a significant way. It's embarrassing. We still don't know. I think right now, here we are 2 days into this thing, and they still have fewer than 80% of the vote in.
Yeah, for the Democrats, it really kind of alters the trajectory of the primaries. You know how it goes. It's a momentum game. Somebody comes out of Iowa with a head of steam and then goes to New Hampshire, and oftentimes you can roll through it. But now it's up in the air, and I really think for the Democrats, in addition to the looking incompetent, this to me creates an opening for Bloomberg, because the big primary is going to be the one we have in March, the big where there's a lot of states and a lot of delegates at stake, that he can go now and say, I'm the competent one. This party is a mess. You need somebody to come in here and clean it up. And it's non-traditional. I know he's still a long shot, but to me, that creates an opening for him.
Okay. I don't understand why we haven't been doing this. It seems to me that primaries, you could just do six regional primaries. Four would be even more optimal. And then you do one every 3 weeks or something over a 12-week period, and then you're done. But you could do them every 2 weeks over a 12-week period, too, and you could do six. And you do the Northeast, you do the Central Atlantic, you do the South, you do the Midwest, the Upper Midwest, you do the Mountain West, and then the West Coast. And when you do that, and it allows these politicians then to move to certain areas. And you don't, because politicians never come to Illinois. The people running for president never come to Illinois.
They come here to raise money.
Right. They show up. They don't do events here. They don't do
rallies. Yeah.
Yeah. They show up. They go up to the North Shore or the Western suburbs or wherever it is. And they put a syringe in and they pull out as much dough as they possibly can. And then they fly off to the next thing. And, sometimes you find out, oh, Vice President Pence was here today. Really? What was he doing? He was collecting checks, and then he's gone. And it just doesn't seem like we're ever in play.
Well, we're not. And we used to be a more relevant state when it was this closer and there was more closer between Republican and Democrat. I think it's a great idea. In fact, Ro, when I was on the national committee a couple of years ago, I advocated for regional primaries. I think states like Iowa and New Hampshire aren't representative of either party's total electorate or the electorate at large, and we'd be better off starting with a state like Illinois, which truly, you get everything in Illinois from top to bottom, from the urban to the rural. You get every political opinion you could ever want right here in the state of Illinois. So yeah. I hope the governor, I hope everybody pushes for that. I would be all for it, but I do like the regional concept because they spent 18 months in Iowa, a state that's never going to be contested. Trump's going to win that by 10 points, and that's it. And they spent all that time there. Nobody gets to touch and feel the candidates here in other states.
Right. And Iowa, and the Democrats that come out of Iowa don't necessarily go and win in New Hampshire. And in South Carolina, for sure.
No, that's just exactly. I was one of those states. I remember when McCain came out of Iowa a few years back, he got third and then went to New Hampshire and won by 19 points. So there's no real correlation. It's completely different
and,
kind of voters.
And this caucus is the stupidest freaking thing ever. First of all, about 17% of the available voters in the, at least this time around for the Democrats, I think it's a little higher for the Republicans. There were more Republicans that showed up in a relatively uncontested race, right?
Yeah, the caucus goes back to when you used to ride your horse to the post office.
Right.
It's not, it's so outdated. And
people go and they go to a room and they assemble in a room and then they choose a candidate. They announce who the candidate for. But then if the candidate, then they start weeding out the lesser candidates and then you have to go to another candidate or leave the place completely.
Right. And that's an outdated system. It needs to go. I think Iowa is done. The only reason they held on for so long is the party chairman on both sides in the respective states. That's where they raised all their money for the next 4 years is through the Iowa caucuses. But I can't imagine they're going to be first in the country again.
No, I don't think so. I
wouldn't it be great if Illinois was?
Well, I mean, it does make a lot of sense. Illinois is a perfect microcosm of America in a lot of ways, right? I mean, it's got all of the different features that you would need. You've got industrial Midwest in places like Rockford and Peoria and other sort of, those are small cities, right, that you see dotting all over America. You've got a major metropolitan area. You've got incredibly rural areas and farmland. You've got big-time farmers, corporate farming interests. You've got small-time farmers.
You've got coal way south.
Yep. You have cities that have much more of a southern feature when you get down near the Mississippi and the Ohio rivers and all of that.
Carbondale is an hour and a half south of Louisville. That's how long this state is.
Yeah. So, just when you stop and you think about it, there is I'd go make that pitch.
I think
because it is America.
I think hopefully the governor will do that. You know, we also have a great media, very politically savvy media team here in Chicago in the state. I think that is a big addition to any of these primaries because it'll be probably a regional thing, and I think that's another asset the state offers amongst all the stuff you just talked about.
Yeah, it's never going to happen.
You know, I think it might. I would not doubt Governor Pritzker, I think, is on the ascent in Democratic national politics. His name was mentioned last night in their response. I think he probably has some sway in the Democratic Party.
Well, it would certainly, it'll be interesting to watch what happens here for Iowa. The first thing is that they basically have to say, now could Republicans still do a caucus in Iowa if Democrats decide they want to do something else?
Yeah, it's all the primaries totally up to the parties. You can move the dates back and forth. I remember in 2008, Speaker Madigan moved the primary up to early February so Barack Obama could win here early.
Yeah.
And it was, remember, it was freezing.
Yes.
And the turnout was terrible.
Right. Yeah. You know, wait. Who needs turnout? What are you talking about, turnout?
It was literally over on both sides by 7:02. Yes. That's how quickly the returns ran. But
well, this is, I love an election day on St. Patrick's Day.
Oh my, yeah,
that is, to me, that is Chicago. Like a gunmetal gray sky, 42 degrees and blustery, maybe a little water in the air. The bars are filled with people,
like the old days.
Yeah,
you know what's good too about that whole weekend, and when Bill Clinton won here and got the sealed the nomination here in Illinois in '92, the Irish Southside Parade. Yeah. All the candidates. He was in it. But, you know, that was a big deal. You should have heard the things that were being screamed at him.
Well, and you could have the same. We can just imagine.
Oh, man.
And that'll be. And
he kept smiling and waving.
And you will have, on Saturday, you'll have the downtown St. Patrick's Day Parade. Oh. And then Sunday, you'll have Southside Irish Parade.
Yeah, everybody be in. All the candidates will be in.
Theoretically, you should have candidates in it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I would love to see.
Would that be a blast?
That would be to see Pete Buttigieg there. I don't know how he's going to fare in the Southside Irish Parade. I'm going to tell you that right now. I don't know. That might be a little something right there.
What about Bernie walking down
Bernie,
Western
right.
Avenue?
I don't to Bernie Wagner. That's pretty good. By the way, I understand. I understand County Fair has very good cold cuts. All right. We just wish everybody the best of luck in all of this. I don't know what to do with it. All right, Pat, thanks very much. If people want to get involved in the Lincoln Forum, what's the website again?
LincolnForum.org. Come. It's a great event. We have great speakers. It's a lot of fun. We take questions from the audience, too.
Yes, where you get a chance to talk to some of the big power brokers, right? That's a big thing. And then a lot of business cards get handed out at these things, too. Guys who are looking to catch on with another campaign. All right. Thank you. Thank you very much. Blackhawks hockey next.